Hello, welcome to The American Pulse. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is a show that seeks to listen, express, and amplify the voice of the American people, no matter where you live in this great nation. We are unabashedly pro-humanity, pro-freedom, and pro-America. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to The American Pulse. Today, we have a great American story, a local woman and hero who has stepped up to run for mayor of Seattle, a job most everyone else is afraid to raise their hands for. And one of the things I've noticed about people that are making a difference right now is that they have, without exception, great courage. I see it in the new grassroots leadership here at the King County GOP, and I see it in my guest today. For it takes courage to stand against the conformist herd. It takes courage to speak up and express your values when others don't seem to share them all. And it takes courage if you're going to live life to your divine potential. My guest today exemplifies all this and more, a woman who has taken her own path to truth, service, and leading by example. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by the Renton Printery. From huge outdoor banners to small hard hat decals, the Renton Printery produce top quality, customizable, full color decals, business cards, letterhead, envelopes, signs, table tents, and more. The Renton Printery is a small, independent, veteran-owned business since 1957. For all your printing needs, go to www.rentonprintery.com. And now, on to our episode. My guest today is Seattle mayoral candidate Rachel Savage. Rachel is in many ways an everyday courageous American, a mother, a successful entrepreneur, and a lifelong citizen of Seattle and the Pacific Northwest. Here is my interview with Rachel Savage. Okay, I am here with Rachel Savage, entrepreneur and walk away from the left and mayoral candidate. Rachel, welcome to the American Pulse. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tony. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course. Yeah, we've got connected recently. I've been really excited to talk to you and thought, well, hey, you know, for sure we're doing the American Pulse because you're running for mayor here. But also I was like, we had this great conversation. I was like, I think I want to stretch this out a bit and have you also on Basecamp for Men. So this is probably going to be split up. So just to give our listeners a little sense of who you are, like, where did you grow up? Where do you live now? What do you do for work? I mentioned that you're an entrepreneur. What kind of business is that? How big's your family? Just anything you'd kind of want the listeners to know before we get rolling here.
Great. Well, I grew up in Tacoma. So that's just a little bit south of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Tacoma, I grew up working class. And when I was growing up in Tacoma, it was such a working class town. And I still love Tacoma. My heart's there. Part of my heart's there for sure. And then when I first came to Seattle, the first time I came to the city of Seattle, I think I was about 16. And I remember coming up I-5 and seeing the city in the distance. And I thought, oh, I want to move here as soon as I can. And that's exactly what I did. So I moved to Seattle and I worked downtown in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. I was a hairdresser at Jean Juarez, and it was a wonderful time to work in Seattle. It was just fantastic. The city was bustling. It was prosperous. There was so much going on. People were dressing to kill. It was just great. It was a really fun time to work in downtown and be in Seattle. And I lived on Capitol Hill. And then I ended up having a couple kids, getting married. And, you know, I really wanted to raise my babies in the city because I'm a city girl.
Yep.
But my husband at the time wanted, he came from the suburbs and he really wanted more safety. So even at that time in the city, there was some crime, but nothing like we're seeing now. So I agreed, fine, I'll move to the suburbs. So I raised my kids for 10 years in Bellevue. And then we moved out to the woods in Duval. And lived out in the rural area there, and I homeschooled my kids. But I always wanted to come back to the city as soon as I could. So after my divorce, I came back. And while my kids were growing up, because I love the city so much, I bought a shop on Capitol Hill, even though I had moved out of the city at that point. And it's called the Vajra. And it's a little shop that was based on my meditation practice. So I got really into sitting meditation and decided I want to have this connection to the city and this shop that has to do with my meditation practice. So I bought the shop, and then I decided to, after running it for a few years, I decided to homeschool my kids. So my mom took it over. So it's been a family business since 1998, but the shop's been there since 1989. So a long time on Capitol Hill. So my mom and I took turns running it. And then I guess it would be in 2012, I finally moved back to the city. So really happy about that. My mother retired. I took the shop back over. And so on one hand, it was real joy to be back in the city. On the other hand, I saw firsthand the rapid decline of Capitol Hill and the city in general. But in that time, I had two boys, which are now 29 and 30, and they're fantastic. And I've been in the city, like I said, back since 2012. And, you know, I never realized how quickly a city or a society, a civilization could crumble.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Disturbing to see.
I know.
Row seat too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you and I have a lot of things in common. When you said Tacoma, you know, I grew up in Longview, which was a working class timber town, same kind of thing. And I adore it. My upbringing was great. But yeah, that's funny that when you said Tacoma, I'm like, oh, there's another thing. You know, did you think you were ever going to be involved? I had the experience too of coming into Seattle for the first time as a young adult and going, oh yeah, this is more my vibe, right? Because it was so exciting back then. But did you ever think that you were going to be involved and running for mayor? I mean, it doesn't sound like you had political aspirations. I mean, was it just coming from your love of the city? Like what was the conversation or the event or something where you felt like, no, I think I want to do this? I mean, did you look around and not see anybody doing it? Like what was the impetus and the spark that had you say, well, no, I think I'm going to run?
Well, no, I never had political aspirations. No. And I kept waiting for someone to come along and fix the problems that I was seeing in the city. I thought any time now, someone's going to step up. There's no way that the rampant drug use, the unchecked crime, the severe mentally ill wandering the streets in suffering, living at the animal level, there is no way that someone's not going to fix this and soon. Mm-hmm. And the other part of my story is I'm a recovered addict myself. So I have 35 years abstinence. Mm-hmm. And I got sober in Tacoma and then continued my abstinence here in Seattle. So I've gone to meetings and been in the recovery community for 35 years helping addicts. So when I started to see what was happening in the city, also I'm a meditation practitioner. So I also practice this present time awareness. So those two things together, present time awareness, my recovery background, and seeing what's happening in the city, I thought I couldn't turn away. Like I see so many people do. I see so many people just look at their phone and ignore the human suffering on the street. And so I thought somebody has to do something. And if another candidate came forward that was ready to give the addicts what I believe the actual help they need, which mm-hmm. comes from enforcing the law and helping them to make the choice to accept treatment, that I would just get behind them.
Right.
But the problem is, in much of my life, I've had this where I don't see in the world what I want to see happening. So eventually, okay, I guess I have to do it.
That's great. Yeah. You know, how do we, I have this conversation with people because I sound like, you know, a grandparent when I'm like, Seattle used to be so much cleaner and nicer and affordable. You know, like I don't want to be that old guy that's like, oh, it was so much better, because it's not really solution oriented. It's not visionary. It's just saying things were better and cheaper when I was a kid. It's like, yeah, I remember hearing my grandparents say that too. So what do you see for Seattle? Like, we're not going back to, you know, I remember I've told people, you know, when I first moved here, much like you, we had a house in Fremont, a very desirable, cool, hip neighborhood with tons of bars and music and stuff. And I think my bedroom costs $125 a month. And I probably made that in one night of bartending, right? Like, it was so easy and affordable and clean. And young people now are like, I can afford a really expensive studio, and they just keep building more and more. So my question is, like, what do you envision? Like, how do we, you know, vision board this as a community with you as a leader? Like, what can it be? Because I don't think we referring to, like, it used to be so much better is necessarily getting us to where we want to go. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, I think both you and I, we had the pleasure to be able to live in a functioning city.
Yes.
And I'm glad I remember what that was like, because yeah. I know it's possible and I know that it actually occurred. Mm-hmm. I think some people don't know. They didn't actually see it with their own eyes or get to experience it for themselves. That's and true. So part of my meditation practice is seeing cause and effect. So as a business owner, as I've been running my shop and seeing the decline of the city, I started to, this is what really got me into the politics, mm-hmm. is to see, well, what's causing this? What's causing the crime in the streets? What's causing people using drugs on the streets all day long? What's causing the theft? What's causing the harassment? What's causing the mental ill? Like, what is causing this? So I started to investigate, and what I saw was, oh, there's policies. It's the management of the city, or I would say the mismanagement of the city, that is causing these conditions. Mm. And that's how I realized, oh, this is where the problem is coming from. So the way to fix it is to get in there and change the policy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the campaign is educating people, teaching people about cause and effect, that we can't have a lawless society and expect to have a functioning city. We can't have that. We can't have both. We can't have no law and order and a safe city. Those two things don't go together. And so we have to decide as a city, what do we want? Do we want the city to be a containment zone for late stage drug addicts and mentally ill, and just have people running amok and the businesses closing and crime happening everywhere? Or do we want a sophisticated, beautiful, clean, inspiring jewel in the middle of the city that everyone wants to come to from all over to get inspired, to learn something, to get a fabulous outfit, to have a great meal, to get inspired? That's what I want. I want this to be the center of our civilization here in Washington State, to be the jewel in the middle. And I know we can go there again. We've been there before. We can go there again.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you're saying. You know, Seattle in the Northwest, that where we grew up, it's so blessed with beauty. I mean, we are one of the most beautiful areas of the world, just the water and the mountains and just the sound. And the city has reflected a lot of that beauty up until the last, say, you know, 15 years or so, where we've seen this kind of darkness descend upon our city, and then, you know, not have people running things that are gatekeepers of what's good and beautiful for the city. They've just kind of, like, for whatever reason, I don't want to get into the rabbit hole of who's doing what, but it's just been mismanaged, to your point. You know, you and I are both walkaways from the left. I was a Kennedy liberal for 25 years, lived in grunge Seattle, then New York City, proud, you know, Kennedy liberal, until I wasn't anymore, until the insane, not just local government, as we've been talking about, but just the insane ideas that were being foisted upon liberals. And you must go along with this. And I just was like, you know what? I'm not down with this. This internal kind of discernment of, you know what? I don't like the way I'm being lied to, and I don't like the way they're implying I have to comply or else I'm going to be outcast. Like, I'm just like, there was a part of me that was really indignant through COVID and through that whole thing, where I'm like, you guys are playing me and I don't like it that much. I'm going to think for myself. I'm going to find, if my friends desert me because I'm leaving the left, then so be it. I want to stand in principles that work for me and my family. And if that's not okay, that's fine. You can, you know, whatever. But I guess I wanted to ask you, like, in a city that's been traditionally liberal, as Seattle has been, do you feel like, you know, having been a longtime liberal yourself, does it hurt you or help you? You know, do liberals in this town feel too butthurt that you might start having some second thoughts about transgender, or you know, all the insane policies of that they've been doing in the city and executing in the city. Do you feel like it hurts you because liberals are still so loyal to the ideology, as crazy as it gets? Or do you feel like it helps you because actually there's probably a lot of independence now, a lot of people that are like, look, I'm a walkaway, but I don't want to say it because I don't want, you know, Judy and Jane to disown me and never talk to me again. So I'm just going to quietly sit with my own ahas. I'm not going to say much. But then somebody like you comes along, they might be like, you know what, I identify with her journey, and I kind of feel the same way. And what, you know, so does it, I guess my question is, do you think it hurts you or helps you that you're a former liberal?
Well, I know, because I work with people all day, mm-hmm. and they talk to me, that there's a lot of people in Seattle who have walked away. They're yep. just afraid, as you're saying, they're afraid to say it publicly yep. because they're afraid they might lose their job. They're afraid their family's going to disown them. They're afraid they're going to lose friends. And for me, I must live my life by my principles. And when my principles haven't changed. What I saw change was the left. Mm-hmm. I'm also a big fan of RFK. And what started happening is I through my questioning what was happening in the city. Why is the city deteriorating into lawlessness? What is happening? Why am I in danger? Why are businesses closing left and right? What is happening? I started looking at the policies that were creating these conditions. And what I saw was that the left had a utopian vision that if we just give people everything, then they'll act right, basically. Right. And that just has not been my experience. That has not been my experience as an addict myself. That hasn't been the experience I've seen with thousands, speaking of addiction in particular, thousands of addicts that were able to get abstinent because of consequences. And so what I saw was the left had a lot of compassion. That's why I was a classic liberal, because I have a lot of compassion, but it was misguided. And this so-called compassion and freedom became cruelty. And so I think the more and more people are seeing this, they're asking, why can't I go to the grocery store without being in fear? Why am I seeing people steal all day long while I pay these expensive prices for my groceries? People want to be a good person, and they're seeing people get away with crime left and right around them, and they're in danger themselves, and they don't like it. And so people have been putting two and two together. And my hope is, and as I saw, I walked away because I saw that the Republican Party now is championing the values and principles that I live by.
Yep.
I mean, they lost me when they started censoring people right yep. there. I mean, yep. there's a list I have, but I'm Gen X. We were talking about this earlier. Free speech. No one's going to tell me what to say and how to say it.
Exactly. Sorry.
That's not happening.
Yeah, so I get it.
I started to see that the policies and the principles that the Republican Party is for, safe cities, so forth, they align with my principles. That's what happened. The party's changed.
Yeah.
So I will always go with people that align with my principles and that is truly compassionate. Yeah. You know, letting people use drugs until they die on the streets is not compassionate. Giving them free housing without any abstinence requirement and letting them kill themselves in these city-sponsored drug dens is not compassionate. Allowing mentally ill to wander the streets in psychosis is not compassionate. So that's where I think everybody can agree on that. And then the people I talk to, when we go from there, they can see, yeah, I've walked away too, but I'm too afraid. Courage is needed. Mm-hmm. Courage is needed. And so my hope, this is part of my motivation for running for mayor, is stepping out and finally saying what everyone's afraid to say, or many are, let's say,
yep.
that they'll get behind, that more and more people will have the courage. Somebody said to me the other day, courage is contagious. And yeah, that's my hope. I mean, trust me, it's not been easy. I've lost friends.
Yep.
I have people that don't want to associate with me anymore. Mm-hmm. But I believe that I'm doing the right thing for the right reason, and that they'll come around at some point, because I don't think there's anything left there, at least not for me on the left, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well said. I love your story. So many things resonate. I have spoken about addiction on Basecamp for Men, done many episodes, even from the get-go. I'm in my seventh season, but, my own struggle with addiction, I've been sober from alcohol for 12 years and no smoking for nearly as long. Yeah. And it was a hero's journey. So I write and talk a lot about our hero's journey, both individuals and collective. And yours is a wonderful story of a hero's journey in through all of this. Now you're coming back to the village with your medicine to help the whole village, which is a true circle of the hero's journey. But my question, I guess, is, like, looking back now on your addiction and recovery, like, what were the big things that you learned? How did it impact your family as well as you got clean and sober?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm proud to say my children have never seen me act on my addiction. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of that.
Right on.
So I was sober when I had my kids, and I've learned so much through not just abstinence, but living by spiritual principles. I've learned to take a moral inventory of myself. I've learned to admit when I'm wrong and make amends. And I think those are very important in all my relationships. And I'm still willing to admit when I'm wrong, because I will be sometimes, of course. I feel that, it's interesting that we're talking about this. I've been involved in recovery groups for a long time, and I got very involved with a Buddhist recovery group. I was on the board for many years. And one of the things that happened with them when I started to see the intolerance of the left is I saw the politics starting to come into a recovery program. And in the 12-step tradition, they have these wonderful traditions to keep religion, although very spiritual programs, right? But to keep religion and especially politics out. So yeah. Everyone can come from all walks of life and come together for this common purpose of attaining abstinence and rebuilding their life. And so when I started to talk about, there were these affinity groups happening, women's meetings, men's meetings, where they were separating people out by gender and race and different things. And I started to question that. Like, is this an antiquated thing? Shouldn't we all just come together as addicts, kind of like the country? Shouldn't we all come together as Americans to support each other, regardless of our religious background or political persuasion? I mean, my hope is Seattle can unify in this way. And I've had a lot of experience with this in recovery rooms. But what started to happen was there was no ability to say, hey, can we have this discussion that maybe, for example, women's meetings, maybe there's not a place for that right now. Maybe we should bring everyone together. I immediately started getting threats of, well, you're a misogynist, you're racist, you're this, you're that. So that's where I started to see the intolerance come in and harm people's recovery.
Yeah.
Harm the common purpose, harm the common goal. So my hope is that we can set that aside, just like I've learned to do in recovery rooms, for rebuilding our city. I mean, our city is not going to make it if we don't address the fentanyl epidemic, the methamphetamine epidemic, and the severe late stage mental illness epidemic. It's not going to make it. No. So my hope is, it's interesting. This is a little bit of a different angle here, but I was thinking about, when we were growing up, I don't know if you remember this, but when someone disagreed, say there was the conservative uncle or, there was some kind of disagreement, we would just say, well, it's a free country.
Yeah.
Disagreed, with our neighbor, they had the political sign in the yard or something. No one was fighting. They would just say, it's a free country.
I remember spirited discussions hearing from my grandparents and their friends, they would go back and forth about things, but not in a mean way. Right. So,
right. It's a free country. It was very tolerant, like seeing the difference, but being able to still live and work and have friendships together in that, the possible disagreement. But as far as recovery, back to recovery, I know we can help these addicts. Mm-hmm. These addicts on the street that we see every day, man, they're in such bad shape. But we can help them. As a city, we have a responsibility to intervene, to do an intervention. And we can do this with the will and with strong leadership. And so this is a huge part of why I've stepped into this campaign, because I know addicts can recover with the right kind of treatment and the right kind of intervention and go on to live happy, productive lives. I've seen it over and over. And it's going to be incredible if we can do this in Seattle, if I can win the election and show everybody what we can do for addicts.
It would be an example for many other cities that are struggling with this. Yes. You know, the Portlands and San Franciscos. I mean, if we can get you in there and get this vision about how we can help our people that are really, really struggling, and if we can implement policies that are going to make the city stronger and cleaner and healthier, that could be something that other cities go, look what they did. Look at what they did in just a few years. That's a lot different than it was, right? As they hear from the ground up what people are saying about what's going on. And you know, you and I, we in a previous conversation, we both talked about Gen X, and I did a show called Gen X Will Save the World. I won't say it was a deep dive. It was more of a wink, wink, and reverence and appreciation for my generation, which can sometimes feel like we're sandwiched between these two behemoths, the boomers on one end and the millennials on the other. But Gen X has we have some very unique qualities. Even my 18-year-old recently pointed out, like, damn, why do you guys always get a free pass whenever they're criticizing? They never criticize you. And what I told my son, I go, because we don't take any shit, first of all. So I said, that's why, you know. But so how does growing up Gen X, how did it inform or give you gifts for the times that we live in right now?
Well, I just feel like we grew up tough.
Yeah.
Any of us, including me, you know, I was one of those original latchkey kids. So I spent a lot of time home alone and having to learn how to take care of myself from a very young age, riding my bike across town when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8, young, just out there in the world. And we had to learn how to survive. We didn't, you know, I was thinking about just walking to school. I walked to school every day when I was a kid. Or taking the bus too can be its own kind of battlefield versus kids today being driven to school.
Yeah.
Driven to school. Never once. I learned so much about life and how to take care of myself by walking to and from school every day. And I think that maybe actually now that Gen X is getting involved in politics more, that hopefully we'll have some real common sense. That's my hope. Common sense, respect, but we are tough and we are outspoken as well. And I think that, you know, through your podcast and through my campaign, hopefully we can awake this sleeping giant.
Yeah.
To get in there. And, you know, of course, the people that Trump has assembled on his cabinet, which also is so inspiring to me.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump himself is very inspiring to me with his tenacity and love for the country. And then RFK coming over, his recovery background. I mean, I think that RFK being in the White House, 40 years abstinent. Yeah. He's a recovery guy. He knows recovery is possible. This is a huge win. And then you have J.D. Vance, whose mother has 10 years. He grew up going to NA meetings, talks about it publicly. So very recovery friendly versus using, you know, medicine as a, I mean, I disagree with the harm reduction model. I disagree with housing first. I think we need to go back to recovery first, abstinence first. Yes, in the beginning, it's a tougher road, but this is what really gets people back to a meaningful life and back into society is abstinence-based recovery, I believe.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, Gen X, what I describe, like when I think of Gen X, I think of independent thinkers, street smart, you know, because when you said latchkey kid roaming around on bikes, I mean, that was our upbringing. You know, it wasn't like, I love my parents for giving us that much room to roam. And it was a different environment. You know, you didn't have a 24-hour news cycle scaring every mother and father that there was something bad around the corner. You know, it was, the news was contained in 1 hour, and it was usually Walter Cronkite or whoever, Peter Jennings. And they were really addressing the big things nationally. You know, the newspaper grabbed whatever they could to put in the newspaper, but for the most part, and it wasn't like we weren't aware that there was danger that could be out there. There was dangerous people, but we were all together. Like our whole tribe was biking around and stuff. So I don't know. I adore how we were raised. And I think it made us strong and resilient and independent, fierce, and also kind of a little anti-authority. Like, why do we have to do it this way? Why can't we do it a different way? Right? Because we always were asking that. Why can't we do this? Why can't we go there? Let's go over and build that, you know? And so I think it's built into our gene pool a little bit from that generation. But I just love your message. I cannot wait. I'm supporting you for mayor. You're the one that stood up, and I just honor your courage and your wisdom. And, how can people find you? How can people support your campaign moving forward? Let's get you in there, and anything else you'd like to do or like to say before we sign off today.
I just love what you said about Gen X being the people that question the status quo and being willing to get in there and build our own stuff and do things differently. That's what we're going to need for the city of Seattle. No more status quo. And I hope people can, their imagination and their enthusiasm can be sparked by our generation. Of course, we want everybody. We want all generations to come in and support new leadership. The Democrats have been at the helm for over 40 years in the city of Seattle. We need new leadership, new ideas, and a new approach to treating drug addiction, mental illness in our city, and go back to a law and order, giving the cops the what they need to be able to do their jobs. And then with the Trump administration, I'm very encouraged by his changing of the trade deals. To ignite prosperity, not only in Washington, but in the whole country. So I hope that that happens here. And if we have a prosperous city through bringing the jobs and the industry back here home, then once Seattle's safe, I believe Seattle will boom, both with what the Trump administration is doing and just having that safety. People want to do business in Seattle and they want to come here. And with more and more jobs, higher and higher wage for those jobs, people will have more money and we'll just be booming. It'll be the boom of Seattle. So you can, if you're interested in that vision for Seattle, you can find me at savagecitizens.com. And why did we call it Savage Citizens? Because it's going to take a savage to win and to change things in this city. And we need all of you. We need the citizens to come together. Time to come out of hiding and vote. And so you can help the campaign. We really need a big fundraising push right now, because right now my competitors all have more money than I do. And to be taken seriously in the media, get the interviews, get the word out there. They actually look at how much fundraising you've done to take you seriously. So we have to get the word out so people know that there's a choice. For the first time, there's a choice, a common sense choice on the ballot for mayor of Seattle. So please contribute. We're working on our democracy voucher campaign, and we're also working to get donations to increase our fundraising so we can let everybody know that we're here and we exist. SavageCitizens.com.
I love everything you're saying, Rachel. I share your vision. It's inspiring. It's new. And I think if we can hold on to that vision and just check off the different obstacles in our way, I think we could really build something unique in this beautiful city that we've called home for so long. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insight and your wisdom. And we'll be tracking you, supporting you, and whenever we can, amplifying your voice. So thanks again for coming on today, Rachel.
Thanks, Tony. It was a pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did with the woman that I'm calling the people's candidate. To support Rachel's courageous run in the Seattle mayoral race, go to www.savagecitizens.com. Thank you, listeners, and we'll see you next week on The American Pulse.